Okay, so we're recording the shiur, something which you can't usually do, or at least can't admit to doing. The title of this shiur, of this drasha, is Pesach and the Essential Jewish Home. And I've been thinking a lot about it because of the fact we've been home a lot over the last couple of weeks, and perhaps we're going to continue to be home a lot over the next few weeks as well. You know, Yeshua Hashem keheref ayin. Hashem can make things go in an instant, one way or another. So who knows? Perhaps by this coming Wednesday, with divine intervention, we'll be back in shul and everything will be back to out as it should be. But barring that, we have an expectation that we could be home for quite a bit. So I think it's worth thinking about, what is the Jewish home? What does it mean, the Jewish home? And it seems to me that this is particularly relevant to Pesach. And as we will see, looking at the psukim relevant to Mitzrayim and Pesach, it turns out that the home is not just an adjunct to the holiday of Pesach, where we happen to do stuff. Turns out it is central to the whole idea of Pesach. So before we get to that, I want to share with you a couple of weeks, a week and a half ago, I called one of the our senior members, who happens to be a Holocaust survivor, and I said, you know, how are you? How are things going? And she said to me, Rabbi Tokayer, when I was in Auschwitz, we were fighting for our lives every day, and it was terrible conditions. Now we're fighting for our lives, but I get to sit in a nice house, and I have heat when I need it, and if it's hot, I have air conditioning, and I have food. So Rabbi Tokayer, it's not so bad. And I hung up the phone feeling a little ashamed for even thinking that that we're facing some challenging times here. So I guess for someone who survived Auschwitz, it's not so bad. But I thought what she said was interesting. I'm in my house, I'm in my home, and it's comfortable, and this provides me some comfort and some solace and support. And that's, I think, how we conceive of a home. But what is Pesach as it relates to the essential Jewish home? So I want to take us in to the first night of Pesach, the very first Pesach that ever existed. And the Torah tells us that, I'm going to read you the pasuk here, and I have some sources to put up on the screen for you in a moment, but just to read for you the pasuk. If you happen to have a chumash handy, and it's easier for you, we're going to be reading a lot from Shmos chapter 12, Perek Yud Beis. So if you happen to have a chumash, that's great. If not, I'm going to put a lot of the psukim up on the screen, and I'm going to share my screen with you now. Right. Let's see. Okay. So I'm reading to you from chapter 12, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel. This is the very first Pesach in Mitzrayim. Says the pasuk, "V'haya hadam lachem laos al habatim," and the blood will be on the doorposts of your homes. "V'ra'isi hadam ufasachti." Aleichem, and I will see the blood, and I will pass over your homes. And that's, of course, where we get to the notion of Pesach from. Question that I want to ask, which we'll get back to hopefully by the end, is why particularly do we have to tell Hashem anything? God is pretty smart. Why does God need us to make a sign on our doorpost so He can skip over our doorposts? That's one question, which we'll put on hold, and we'll get to towards the end. And I'd like to take a look at another pasuk, and that pasuk is a little bit later on in this parak. And this is the pasuk, the question that I want us to think about quite a bit, if at all possible. The pasuk says the following. This is pasuk 22. So we'll scroll down. Chaf Beis, if you have a chumash in front of you. Okay. Ulakachtem agudas ezov, we're being given the instructions for the karban Pesach and for putting the door on the dam on the doorpost, and you'll take an hyssop and put it on the doorpost. Vigatem al mashkof el shtei mezuzos min adam asher basaf, and you will light the doorpost with the blood. And here's a fascinating thing: Ve'atem lo teitzu ish mi Pesach beisawad boker, says the pasuk 22. You shall not leave your homes until morning. So somebody, I don't remember who, sent me a meme on WhatsApp a few days ago, and it was a picture of a family at the night of Pesach during Mitzrayim, and everybody is looking at one kid at the table and saying, "Why are we stuck in the house? He's the Bechor." And I started thinking about that. It's a really good question. It's not just a joke. Why was everybody stuck in the house? Va'atem lo teitzu ish mi Pesach beisawad boker. It was only the Bechor that was in danger of being killed on the night of Makas Bechoros, on the eve of the Exodus of Egypt. Why was everybody else stuck in the house? So apparently, this is not the first time the question was posed. Actually, Rashi himself asks this question, and Rashi says the following. I have it up here on your screen. Rashi quoted by the Ramban, and then the Ramban himself. Rashi says the following. He says, Magid, the reason why everybody was stuck in the house, even though it was just the Bechor who was in danger, is Shemei Acher Shenitna Rishus Lamashchis L'chabel, Eino mavchin bein tzadik l'rasha. When there is a plague outside, once, says Rashi, in citing the Chazal, once God has given permission, as it were, for this danger to be upon us, the plague doesn't distinguish between the righteous people and the Rishayim. The Laila Rishus l'mechablim hu. Nighttime, he says, is a time of danger. If it's a time of danger, you don't go outside. You just don't go out. It doesn't make a difference if you're a tzaddik. And it doesn't make a difference if you're a rasha. Even if the Rishayim are the ones that are intended for. Says Rashi, that's why they stayed in. Maybe I particularly am not susceptible to the plague. But you know what? Once it's out there, you can't tell who's going to get it. So says Rashi. And now the Ramban takes it even a step further and says something really fascinating. I've underlined it for you. V'chein atamotze, you think that this is something which is just a throwaway? Our avos, our forefathers, modeled this for us themselves. Sheha avos v'hanavim nahagu b'derech eretz. You know why they stayed inside? Because they followed Derech Eretz, what is sensible, the way of the world. And we see it in Avram. He got up in the morning to do his mission, rather than the nighttime, which was considered a time of danger. Vayashkem Avram baboker, vayashkem Moshe baboker, vayashkem Yoshua baboker, vayashkem Shmuel baboker. All of these great avos, neviim, tzadikim, they didn't say to themselves, well, I'm quite righteous. I'm different than everyone else. I will set up my organization. I will set up my minion. I'll set up the way I'm going to do it, and I'll be okay. V'harei dvarim kal v'chomer. And the Ramban says, if the Avos understood that what's out there for one is out there for all, then kal v'chomer, we should get that message. The avos in each of these situations was not just Stam going to work, or even going to a wedding, or a bar mitzvah, or a bris, or a kvura, God forbid. They were going to do specific tzivui Hashem. They were going to do the will of God, a directive of God. Not just a fulfillment of a mitzvah, which is good, a direct fulfillment of the will of God. And they said to themselves, Nahagu b'derech eretz, we're not better than anybody else. We're special than anybody else. We're not more protected than anybody else. Sha'ar b'nei adam alachas kama v'kama. if this is how the Avos conducted themselves, you look at what the reality is of life, and then you make a decision based on that. You cannot say, I'm different, I'm not susceptible to it. And for that reason, says Rashi and the Ramban, citing the Chazal, they didn't go out that night of Pesach. Even though the plague was not susceptible, they were not supposedly susceptible to the plague, because it was only the Bechorim, it was only the firstborn. But it doesn't make a difference. Once in the plague out there, you stay indoors, says the Ramban. And so I thought that that was a very interesting answer to our question. Why did the family stay in when it was only the Bechor that was susceptible to the plague? So says Rashi and the Ramban, as we just saw, an even more powerful thought, and saying it even more powerfully. But I'd like to share with you, and this is going to be sort of the gist of what I want to talk about tonight, is I think that the reason that they didn't go out, and the reason that Hashem is telling them, Atem lo seitzu ish mipesach beisod boker, you shall not go out of your house until morning, is because there's a very essential thought, a value, a point, a message about a Jewish home that the Ribbono Shel Olam was trying to teach the Jewish people, and by inference to the readers, to all of us generations later who are reading the story of Mitzrayim. So what is that message of the essential Jewish home? So let's start. I told you we're going to do a lot of reading from Perek Yud Beis. Whoops, not there. If you have a Chumash in front of you, you can read it out of the Chumash. I'm going to give you up on your screen over here. This is Perek Yud Beis. This is really the meat and potatoes of the story of Mitzrayim, chapter 12 in Shmos. Okay. So the first thing I think is worth noting is, I can't see everybody's face on the screen right now because I'm sharing my screen, but I'm going to open this up. Does anybody know how many times in the 10 plagues the home is specifically mentioned as a point in which the plague is going to occur? We have 10 plagues. Anybody want to take a guess? You can unmute yourselves or just raise a hand. And how many? 10, 9, 5, 1. Turns out Yosef Seewald is saying 4. That's almost correct and not entirely wrong. Okay. So it turns out that if you go through the psukim, the plagues that specifically mention that it will infest the home are numbers 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. Tzvardeya, Arov, Shchin, Arbe, and presumably Makas Bechoros. So we have 5 out of the 10 plagues. I call that a pattern. It's not even just 1 and 6 or 2 and 8. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. And possibly Choshech as well, which would break the pattern, but because Choshech also doesn't say it quite explicitly, as Choshech is also not necessarily so explicit, but I think the clear assumption of the Psukim is that at least 4 to 5, that's why I said Yosef was not entirely wrong, but and could be right, at least between 4 and 5 plagues were in the home. So what I think the Torah is pointing out for us here is, number one, to see what is not the value or the definition of a Jewish home. What is not the conception, I should say, of a Jewish home? And that is, it's not a place where you go to for protection. You don't go there for protection. Tzvardeya, Arov, Shchin, Arbe, and Makas, and possibly Makas Bechoros. You know, the frogs are usually outside. Arov, wild beasts, are usually outside. Shchin, can't say that's usually outside. Arbe, locusts, are usually outside. These are things which are usually outside and somehow made their way into the home. The point is that if we assume that the home is a place of protection, the 10 plagues tell us you should be disabused of that notion immediately. Because the home provides no protection whatsoever. At least, you know, from a metaphysical perspective. Obviously, we sit in a home to protect ourselves from rain. But it is not the ultimate source of protection. So if the Makos, if the 10 plagues there are to tell us anything about the role of God in the world, and maybe it's about how, you know, terrible God is that he'll inflict plagues on people, or maybe it's how powerful he is, or maybe it's how strong he is, or maybe it's how onerous he is, but perhaps, just perhaps, a careful read of the Psukim will tell us that the Makos are teaching us about how we should conceive of ourselves in the home. That a home is not a place of protection, although it may protect us. It is the Ribbono Shel Olam that is the source of our protection. Okay, so now let's take a look at, that's a negative, sort of a negative description, what a Jewish conception of a home is not. What is the Jewish conception or the ideas that are being propelled by our psukim here? So, just before we get to the psukim, I'd like to point out that even halachically speaking, the home is a central feature of Pesach. There are very few halachos, there are very few mitzvos which tell us that you cannot have it in your home. Very, very few, almost, it's almost unique. You're not allowed to eat chametz, you're not allowed to own chametz, you're not allowed to have it in your home. It must be banished from the home. The halacha is, in fact, and there's a great discussion about this in the Talmud, let's say you have a Gentile neighbor, or a domestic help, or a friend, or whoever, and they have or an aide, or a nurse, or anybody, and they keep chametz in your home. If it's their chametz under their responsibility, so it's that's not yours, and that's not even considered your home because it is under their ownership, as it were, and it's under their direction. But a Gentile's chametz in your home, which you bear some responsibility for if it gets lost or stolen, that's in your home. And that must be banished from the home. Another Jew's chametz, which is in your home, whether you have responsibility for it or not, you have to banish it from your home. Tashbisu se'or mibateichem. You got to get rid of it. Even halachically, it is reflected in the halacha that Pesach is sanctifying the home and making the home central to our conception of what Pesach is all about. So what is the home about? So let's read a few psukim, and as we read the psukim, we can call, I think, a few ideas. Beginning of Perek Yud Beis, unfortunately I'm not as facile with online pointing and highlighting as I'd like to be, but I'll point it out to you as best I can, and we can read it together. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron, HaChodesh hazeh lachem Rosh Chodeshim. God gives us the first mitzvah to declare Rosh Chodesh. Dabru al kol adas Yisrael le'mor, besor lachodesh, v'yikchu lahem ish selebeis avos se labayis. So you have to take on the 10th day of the month, a few days before Pesach, you have to take this Paschal lamb, you have to take this seh. And it's described as seh lebeis avos and seh labayis. A lamb for the family, and it's translated here as household. But the word is beis avos. And I think that that's point number one. A Jewish home has to be infused with present, the bayis, the family, but it also has to be one of beis avos, one which is infused with the tradition of the past. If we live in the past without a focus on the present or the future, we're doomed. And if we just focus on the present without a connection on the past, then we are rudderless. So point number one, now if it was just these two words, beis avos and bayis, I think that we could reject my thesis out of hand. But as I think you'll see in a moment, the word bias comes up so often in these psukim, one cannot deny that the Torah is putting an emphasis on house and home. Let's read further. V'im yim'at habayis, and if the bayis, if the household does not have sufficient, is too small for the lamb, in other words, to consume the lamb on its own, v'lakachu ushcheino hakarov el beiso, then you and your neighbor who is close to your house, karov el beiso, ish l'fi achlo tachosu alaseh. So you have to have a seh for bayis and beis avos. And if you don't, then and if you cannot do it on your own, then you bring somebody else in with you, somebody who is karov el beiso, close to the house. An interesting way of saying somebody who's nearby. Five, pasuk five, setamim, zachar ben shana yelachem min aksavim u min azim tikachu. You should guard your Paschal offering for 4 days. V'shachatu aso kol kadas Yisrael ben arba'im. Says the pasuk. Pasuk seven. V'lakchu min hadam v'nasnu al shtei hamizuzos v'al hamashkof al habatim. And you will place the blood on the doorposts. Now, doorposts are in houses. You don't have doorposts in the middle of nowhere. And yet, the Torah tells us, on the doorposts, on your house. The house plays a significant role here. And what kind of house? Al habatim asher yochlu oso bahem. The house in which you're going to eat the Karban Pesach. So the house here, on the one hand, is a place that you're going to be saved. And on the other hand, it's not just enough that the house should be a place of refuge, but the house also has to be a place where there is positive engagement. It is a place where you're being saved from the magefa, from the makas bechoros, for sure, by the word of Hashem. But it is also a place, it cannot just be a place of refuge. That in and of itself cannot be sustaining. And therefore, it says, Alabatim asher yochlo so bahem. The houses in which you're going to eat the Pesach, a home which the Judaism is one of simply, let's protect ourselves so we don't assimilate into the culture around us. Let's make sure that we don't die spiritually, is a very, it's a defensive Judaism, which is one which I would suggest is hard to pass down to a next generation. And it is certainly hard to pass down in a generation such as ours. It cannot be a Judaism of refuge, a Judaism of survival. It has to be one of vibrancy, of thriving. So it's on the one hand, it's alabatim it's going to save you by Hashem's word, but it's also alabatim asher yochlo so bahem. Okay, let's go on a little further. That's not the end of our house and home in Pesach. Pasuk nine. Pasuk 9 and 10 tell us some of the halachos of how you're supposed to eat the Karban Pesach. And we pick up on Pasuk, where do we go here? We will pick it up on Pasuk 15. Shivas yomim matzos tochelu. 7 days you shall eat matzah. Ach bayom harishon tashbisu seor mibateichem. You have to banish the seor from your house. Whoever eats chametz gets a punishment of kares. So it's interesting, the word that is used here for banishing the chametz from your homes is se'or. Se'or is a particular type of chametz. It is the yeast that causes the bread to rise. Se'or is the leavening agent. So the Torah says, right, you know, we're looking at this on a simple pshat level, but we're also looking at it on a deeper level. What is the message, the underlying message which is being promoted here by this overwhelming emphasis on the bayit? So here I believe what the Torah is telling us is, Bayom harishon tashpisu se'or mibateichem. You have to get rid of the se'or, the leavening agent. It's not enough just to look at the symptoms. We have to make sure that we create a home in which the triggers, just ask if somebody has their, to mute themselves, please. to ensure that the leavening agents, the triggers for Seor, are absent from our homes. It's not good enough to deal with the symptoms. You have to go to the core of the issue. And that requires some measure of self-reflection and a measure of living a considered life, where we are aware of ourselves and mindful of our homes and mindful of how we conduct ourselves with our spouses and our children and ourselves. Are we creating an environment in which the triggers for chametz are banished from the home? Or do we just let them sort of sit in the background and hope that they cause no harm? You know, we live in an environment today where we're very careful about what comes into the home. I'll tell you, I don't know about any of you, but when we bring in canned food, we wipe the cans down before they go into with Clorox wipes. If we bring in fresh fruits and vegetables, so we, and by we, I mean Esther, actually washes our fruits and vegetables with soap before putting them away. Because a virus as a small contagion can live on a surface for more than just a few minutes, and who knows if we're susceptible to it. And it's true in the physical reality, and this is what the Torah is telling us in the spiritual reality. Are we looking at the triggers, at the underlying sources for chametz? Or are we just looking at the symptoms of it after they have their pernicious effect and God forbid, end up on a ventilator? You try to do what you can so you don't end up, God forbid, on a ventilator. And the Torah is telling this from a spiritual perspective. Pasuk Tes Zayin. We're not done with the Torah's emphasis on the home. Uvayom Arishon. Sorry, let's skip to Pasuk 17. I'll go a little further. Here, Pasuk 22. Ulekachtem agudas ezov utevaltem badam. This is the pasuk that we started with. You shall not leave your home during the night. And we spoke about that in our opening. V'avar Hashem l'ngofes Mitzrayim. God will pass to blight Mitzrayim, and He will see the blood on our doorpost. Ufasach ala pesach al batechem. Again, that God's not just going to pass over us; He's going to pass over our homes. Let's go just a little bit further, and we can wrap up this portion of the presentation. The pasuk says, "Ushmartem l'chok olam." Let me just scroll down for you, so you don't have to find it on your own. Go here. This is we'll begin with where is it? Okay, I'm not seeing it right this second. I'm sure it's right in front of my eyes, but we'll continue with one more. Vayomer Hashem, pasuk 43. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'el Aharon zos chukas haPasach. This is the law of the Pesach. Pasuk 46. Bevayis echad yeachel. It should be eaten in one house. Lo sotzi min habayis. Don't take the food out of the house. Rather, eat it in one house and eat it entire. You should be in one house and the food should be in one house. You can't take it and split it up. Yet again, the Torah telling us that the house, the home, is in fact significant. On your screen in the next parak in front of you, just a couple of more psukim. Matzos ye'achel, you shall eat matzos for 7 days. You shall not see any chametz. And vishamarta esachuka hazos levoada miyamim yamima. That you shall guard this forever, forevermore. And this is in fact what is given to us for generation to generation. So hopefully, at least by reading these psukim in chapter 12, what I've hoped to establish is simply that the home is central to Pesach, and there are even some thoughts about the value of the home that come through in these psukim. Okay. So let's go back to our original question and now see if we can answer it well. So why did they stay home? Why did they stay home in the night? Why did Hashem tell them that they had to stay home all night long? So I think there are a few ways to in fact look at this. Torah says, stay home, because you have to look at when they stayed home. They stayed home the night before they left Mitzrayim. The night before, they were still slaves in Egypt. The night before, they were still in bondage. Why would Hashem have them eat the matzah or eat the Karban Pesach, have give them the mitzvah of Karban Pesach, all the accoutrements of celebration of freedom? Why would God give that to them the night before while they're still in bondage? And the answer is, I believe, I'm not the first to have said it, is that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to give the Jewish people the gift of being able to envision what freedom would be, to have the imagination of what Cheres would be about. And that, I think, is once a person has it in their mind, they can then affect it. They can bring about the result. But if a person doesn't even have in their mind what it looks like, it's hard to move forward, right? I mean, maybe you remember from high school or college or university, you know, the hardest thing, at least for me, you know, writing a term paper was coming up with the idea. Where are you going to take this idea? The idea, having a conception, what am I going to do, you know, in life? I have to have sort of like a vision of where I'm going to be. What do I want to accomplish? What do I want? But if I'm just wandering about aimlessly, it's hard. You might stumble upon it anyway. Some people are fortunate enough. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give them the gift of being able to envision in their minds, the gift of creativity, the gift of imagination, the gift to be able to see success, greatness, cheres in their minds before it actually occurred. And by doing that, once the opportunity would arise, they would be able to see it and hold on to it. And I think that is the bias. Ufasachti aleichem, don't go out of your house. Don't think that if you leave your house, you'll be able to see better. In the house, we have to create a home which enables us to be able to envision beyond its walls. There are plenty of people that leave home and have nothing in their head, nothing to be able to envision about their lives. It is creating a home which enables a child and enables us to be able to see far beyond. And that is a gift, because then when the opportunities arise, we can capitalize them and seize upon them. That is an extraordinary gift. And it's an extraordinary characteristic, an essential characteristic, I believe the Torah is suggesting here, of the Jewish home. Two, it is humility. Like Lot before, all those generations before, who did not look back when stone was burning. Why didn't he look back? Why was he not supposed to look back? Why was it so pernicious that Lot's wife did look back? Because there's a certain arrogance and smugness and arrogance and pride to think that I'm somehow better than all that. Maybe I am. But there's a pride and arrogance that comes watching a person wallow to their death. There's something really bad about that. And so a Jewish home is lo totzi ish mi pesach beisod boker. Don't go out. I don't want you to fall into the trap of watching the Mitzrayim die and feel that somehow, you know, it's a sense of pride on your part. It might be a pride on our part that we chose differently, but it's not pride on our part to see others suffer and die, even if in this case one could suggest that it was deserved. So point number two, lo totzi ish mi pesach beisod boker, don't go out until the morning. A Jewish home is filled with humility. Humility between ourselves and our spouses, children, parents, and even humility just ourselves. If we're living by ourselves, there's a certain humility of how we conduct ourselves. There's a number three. Pesach is the anti-Sukkos. On Sukkos, we leave our homes to demonstrate our faith by going into the sukkah, where we are under God's protection. On Pesach, we stayed in our homes to demonstrate our faith that we are relying on God's protection, that the home does not provide us the ultimate protection. It is the Ribbono Shel Olam who in fact does so. And this idea that the walls of our house are strong, but they are not ultimately what brings me ultimate security in life. My security comes from a trust and faith in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Pesach is the anti-Sukkos. If Sukkos, we go out of our homes to demonstrate faith. On Pesach, Hashem said, stay in your home, because the home does not provide protection. And by staying in your home, that's how you will demonstrate faith. And this idea of demonstrating faith by going into the home, I think is something I'm going to share with you. If you never noticed it on your own, I hope that you will find this absolutely remarkable. When the Jewish people first see the man, what do they say? What do they ask? What's the question that they ask? Man who? What is that? And the Torah says, Vishal Ishmei Achiv, that each person asked their neighbor, what is this? But if you look a few psukim later in the very same story, after they already know what it is, after they already have experience for what it is, the pasuk says, Beis Yisrael, the house of Israel, called it man. In other words, a Jewish home, the bias represents our faith in Hashem. If we are able to infuse our homes with an emuna and a bitachon, that is what is being commanded here, and being the idea which is being propagated, that the home can and should be a place of emuna and bitachon, even with our four walls, even with a strong roof. The lo teitzu ish mi pesach beso ad boker. Don't go out till morning, because in the home is where you will demonstrate your emuna. And I think that that's why when the Jewish people understand that the man is coming from heaven, that's when the Torah says Beis Yisrael calls it man. Before they knew what it was, before they understood that this was man from Hashem, it was ish mi achiv, one person asking the other. Once they understood it came from Hashem, the bias is invoked. Beis Yisrael. Four. Why did they stay in their homes that night? Why did Hashem command them? A basic idea in Judaism: Imo Anochi Betzara. Maybe I'm not threatened, but I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to hold your hand in your deepest, darkest, most challenging moment. Imo Anochi Betzara. That's a Jewish home. A value, the essential value of a Jewish home is we're all in it together. In the home structure, everybody in the home, but in Beis Yisrael, in the home, the house of the Jewish people, we're all in it together. Imo Anochi Bitzara. How many times have I heard it as a rabbi, and I'm sure you've had it in your own experience, when perhaps you go to a shiva house, or maybe visit somebody who is ill, and they tell you, I'm glad you just came. You didn't have to say anything. Just showing up, Imo Anochi Betzara, to demonstrate that we feel the pain of another human being. And maybe that's why they were commanded not to go out of the house. On the one hand, it's not to be prideful over the demise of the Mitzrim, but the Bechor in the house was under threat. And even though everybody else wasn't under threat, Imo Anochi Betzara, I am going to be with you. I will hold your hand. I will stay with you till the last moment. Five, and the fifth and final point. The fifth and final point here is that a Jewish home has to be one which is infused with Kedusha, with holiness. Now that might sound self-evident. I'm a rabbi giving a Shabbos HaGadol drasha. I'm going to say it shouldn't be infused with Kedusha. But I think that as a, you know, somebody once said that Christians talk about God all the time and Jews don't talk about God at all. We talk about mitzvos. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think that there is some kernel of truth here, certainly as Orthodox Jews, that we don't often talk about Hashem. You know, we talk about the meaning of a mitzvah, maybe the technical way to perform a mitzvah, but we're not like very God-conscious in our vernacular. I don't know, maybe some of you are. I don't want to judge anybody. But I think as a community, you know, it's not like, you know, we're always talking about God. And so I think the Torah is tells us that the bias, a Jewish home, has to be one which is infused with kedusha, with holiness, with God on the lips. It has to be the ambiance, the atmosphere of the household. Now, why do I say this? Where do I get anything about kedusha from these psukim over here? I didn't. And I don't think that you can. But I think that what you can do is notice that the bias is absolutely central to the message of Pesach. So if a bias is central to the message of Pesach, what you have to ask yourself, what is a bias? What is a house in the Torah's conception? So whenever you want to know what a word in the Torah means, best place to do it, go to the first time it's mentioned in the Torah. And if I am not mistaken, the very first time we have a version of the word bias mentioned in the Torah is by the Teva. It says, V'chafarta mi-bias u-mi-chutz, which is the Hebrew title of this Shabbos HaGadol drasha, that Noach is told to laminate, to seal the Teva, mi-bias, from its interior. Bias means interior. And chutz means the exterior. Bias means a home and a house, because a home and a house is really all about what goes on inside. It's the interior. So from Noach, we understand, from that very first time the word bias is used, we understand that the word bias means interior. It's not about the walls. It's not about the roof. It's about what's going on inside the house. You know, a person can live in a mansion and there could be strife and fighting and all types of terrible dynamics inside the house. I remember years ago, I was visiting Israel in 1990. I was, 20-something years old at the time. I was 22 years old. I was visiting Israel and I visited cousins of mine who lived in Petach Tikva. And I had never visited them before. It was the first time I was visiting them. And they lived in an apartment. I showed up to the apartment. They had 7 children. And I showed up to the apartment to learn that it was a 3-bedroom apartment. 1 bedroom for the parents, 1 bedroom for the boys. There were about 4 boys or 3 boys. And 1 bedroom for the girls, 4 and 3. And I slept in the living room. But I remember thinking to myself afterwards, here you have 7 people living together. 7 kids, 2 parents, 9 people living together. And to be quite honest, I never saw such beautiful children with such midos in my life. I mean, it's such kind and, considerate. I wasn't putting on a show. After, you put on a show for the first 15 minutes. You can't put on a show for, when you're with somebody for 48 hours. At least kids can. I don't think children can. And then, we live in nice, big homes, and some of us are blessed to children to have their own bedrooms, or maybe they share with 1 or 2 other kids. You know, they're not necessarily having 7 kids, 9 people in a small, 2.5 bedroom apartment. So it's not the structure that defines us. The bias means the interior. It's what goes on inside. So again, why am I pushing this on you that a house should be a place of kedusha and godliness? Other than that, I'm a rabbi, and maybe that's what you would expect to say. There's one other time, or a couple of other times where we see the word bias used. And that is when it comes to the Mishkan. When it comes to the Mishkan, we see the word bias used again. Mi bias u michutz la parochas. On one side of the parochas, the interior of the inner sanctum and the exterior of the inner sanctum. Bias is used by Noach, which on one level was a place of Kedusha, relative to the rest of society. And bias is used to describe the interior of the Mishkan versus an exterior portion. I think when the Torah emphasizes time and time and time and time again by Pesach, the bias, the home, the house, the home, the home, the home. It's not about the home just. It's about the interior. And the interior, as we see by the Mishkan, the interior is Kedusha, is holiness. And I think that the idea here is that our homes have to be suffused with spirituality. Now maybe one person's version of Kedusha might be a little different than somebody else's. But in the at the end game, it were meant to create a home whose interior is a bias like the bias of the Mishkan, like the bias of Tevas Noach, that is infused with an atmosphere, that it sort of drops off of our lips. We get it by osmosis. I'll share with you a personal story, or a personal experience. When I was a couple of weeks ago, a cousin of my wife sent us a video of their Purim Seuda, about 2 minutes of the Purim Seuda, and they had music going in the background. And it was particularly interesting to me because this was a Sephardic Purim Seuda playing completely Ashkenaz music. It was a pretty interesting sort of contrast to see everybody like dancing to Ashkenaz music. And I've gone to plenty of Sephardic events where they play Sephardic Pizmonim. And they started playing this song, which I hadn't heard in many, many, many years. And it's a Yiddish song. It's called Olam Haba. And if you will indulge me for 22 seconds, it goes like this. Olam Haba is a gute zach, lernin taira is a besser zach, varfa vek yedin yach, lernin taira nachunach. Olam Haba is a gute zach. Which, for those of you who aren't Yiddish speakers, such as myself, means that Olam Haba is a good thing, but learning Torah is even better. And the more and more we learn Torah, the more we go over it and over and over again, it's the better and greater it is, and it's all in a rhyme, and ends up with, you know, Olam Haba is good. But really, the implication is learning Torah is better. I share with you this story because that song sits in the rear of my subconscious. My father, Alav HaShalom, used to sing that song quite often. And I don't think I heard him sing it or anybody sing that song in 30 years. And when I heard the song, it's not just that I remembered my father singing it. It awoke within me a whole series of emotions and experiences and thoughts and memories. That sort of bias in creating an interior of Kedusha where it just lives within us. Postscript, now when I put my kids to sleep, I sing them Olam Haba Zagut Zach. But the idea is to create an interior in which the atmosphere itself is just dripping with it, where you don't think about it, and it just seeps into our subconscious and our unconscious. That's, I think, why the Torah on Pesach, the first mitzvah, bias, 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 bias. The home is extraordinary, can be extraordinary. The essential values of a Jewish home are true about humility, and it's true about faith in Hashem, and it's true about Iman Ochi Betzara, being with each other in our difficult times. And all of these things are true, and it's true about creating a space for imagination where we and our children and others, we can all envision success and greatness. But at the end of the day, I believe in my heart of hearts that the emphasis on the bias, on the interior on Pesach, is to remind us, Lo teitzu ish mi Pesach beisod boker. Don't go out this night. Don't go out tonight. Stay home. Because in these moments, even if it's just you, in these moments of solitude, in these moments of isolation, are an extraordinary opportunity to create Kedusha, to bring the Shekhinah into our homes. And I'll close with this last point here. I'm going to put up on your screen a, let's see if I have it here. There we go. Okay, does everybody see on your screen? This is from the Makoros Gedolos. It is, I'm going to make it a little larger so you can maybe see it a little better. So, what does the word Pesach mean? Word Pesach means, if I woke you up at 2 o'clock in the morning, Pesach means to pass over. Every Chumash that I see says Pesach means pass over. But that's only Rashi's rendition of the word. The word Pesach does not only mean to pass over. If you take a look at Rabbeinu Bechaya, on your page here, page 305, take a look at Rabbeinu Bechaya. Rabbeinu Bechaya says the following. It's, let me scroll down here for you a little bit. And there we go. Yud Gimel, Rabbeinu Bechaya, it's on the top left-hand side of your screen. Rabbeinu Bechaya says the following. Ein hadam monea hanegef. The blood on the doorposts is not what stopped the plague hitting the Bechor of the Jewish people. Limedcha HaKosov, the Torah is teaching us, ki mi sheheemin ba'kodesh baruch hu, whoever had faith in God, emuna shlema, perfect faith, and talabo bitchono, put their trust in God, v'lo chashash le'emas paro, and didn't worry about the decree of paro, v'zavach b'farhesia, and they slaughtered the god of Egypt publicly, and they took from that blood and put it on their door, on their doorpost. Hare ze tzaddik. That's a tzaddik. Somebody who feels the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they're willing to go to bat for it. That's a tzaddik. Ra'ui hu sheyagin alav. Such a person is worthy of God's protection. Pesach doesn't mean that God passed over our homes. As Rav Kook put it, the word Pesach means to hover. Take a look at the on the bottom of your page, should be right over there. The Chizkuni says, "What is I can't highlight it for you. I'm sorry, but it's right here where I'm putting my pointer. Pesach means ufasati. It means I skipped. I walked, but not that I walked over." Look at the pasuk that the Chizkuni quotes. Vayifaschu al hamizbeach. It's a pasuk from Malachim. And this pasuk from Malachim means that they walked, they danced on the mizbeach. That's Pesach. Dancing on the mizbeach. Hashem didn't pass over our homes. When Hashem saw that we were there for him, Hashem pasach al batenu. God dwelled, he danced on our doorsteps, on our rooftops. It's a moment of intimacy, a moment of love, a moment for the generations. And that's indeed why the Torah says that when your children and grandchildren will ask in the future, what happened here, you'll tell them the story. You'll tell them the story of the Paschal Lamb. You'll tell them the story of Egypt. But most of all, you'll tell them the story of the essential Jewish home. I wish you all a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, and I hope that in our homes, however we will be celebrating with more people in our homes or less than we ordinarily do, that our Pesach is one which is suffused with godliness and suffused with all the wonderful attributes of a Jewish home. Have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, good Yantif, and good Shabbos. If anybody wants to unmute yourself, and you're welcome. I'll take rebuttals if anybody wants to rebut.
The home is not important.
Thank you, Rabbi Shiffman. Excellent rebuttal.
Yeah, thank you, Rabbi Shiffman.
I think we recognize that voice.
Rabbi, so I didn't
What was that?
Was that Ruhamba's home in Petah Tikva?
No, that was somebody else. Somebody else.
Take care, Rabbi.
Okay, good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Did you hear that, Miss Paul?